This WBEZ podcast is supported by the Crown Family School of Social Work Policy and Practice at the University of Chicago, where research meets real-world impact. The master's program in social work blends classroom learning with extensive field education guided by faculty known for groundbreaking research. Applications are open at crownschool.uchicago.edu/socialwork. Inspire change. Shape the future. This WBEZ podcast is supported by the Poetry Foundation, with a reminder that Chicago is the pulse of poetry. Visit the Poetry Foundation on the corner of Superior and Dearborn to explore their library of 40,000 books, attend public events, and view Frente a la Vida, Facing Life, a striking multidisciplinary art exhibition by Chicago artist Victoria Martinez. Learn more at poetryfoundation.org.
Can you refresh your wardrobe without wearing out the planet? I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and this is Reset. It's spring, and if you're like me, you're cleaning out your closet, getting rid of things that don't fit, are worn out, or are just so the old you. And you might be wanting to fill those hangers with some fresh fits. But not so fast. Our love of new looks and throwing out last season's styles are terrible for the environment. The UN estimates that a truckload of abandoned clothes is incinerated or dumped in landfill every second. In a bit, we'll hear about how some people in Chicago are tackling this issue. But first, to understand fashion's environmental impact, we're talking to Karen Weigert, Reset sustainability contributor. Karen, that term, fast fashion, is in vogue these days. So what does that mean exactly? And is it fair to say that the bulk of our clothes fall under that category?
It's probably fair to say that. And when we're talking about fast fashion, it's really been a fundamental switch in the fashion industry. And the fast really comes from how quickly new items come to market. So, you know, you go back a couple decades and fashion had four seasons and new things would come out of the high fashion lines and they would gradually trickle down into things that you would find in an everyday store. So the color or the cut or the shape. But now you're seeing new things introduced almost constantly, like literally weekly. Mm-hmm. You're having major, major
new introductions. Yeah, when did that happen? When did this fast fashion come into play?
Fast fashion, loosely you could say probably around 2000. So if you look at kind of 2000 to 2014 or so, the number of garments produced globally doubled. We're now in a world where we're talking 100 billion garments a year.
Wow.
Yeah, huge.
That's a lot. So the point here, Karen, is not to villainize people who get their clothes from fast fashion, right? Out-of-pocket costs are often much lower than more high-end sustainable options. So what efforts are you seeing, though, to make environmentally conscious options more accessible to folks or to all people?
Yeah, the start is always how many items do you need? But when you do have to get a new item, we are seeing more and more companies start to make inroads in reducing the environmental impacts of fashion choices. So you'll see things like different dyes being used that will have less of a toxic output. You'll see a reduction in trying to use fewer plastics, actually, in our clothing. It's been a huge growth area. And less water. So you will see that it's definitely something to look for. Some labels will actually brand the actual item or a subline. But it's in a broader industry that has become incredibly fast, as we were talking about. And it's a massive global supply chain. So you are seeing inroads in multiple brands. Even the local company we talked to a couple weeks ago that does carbon recycling, they are creating a line of plastics that can go into clothing. But we're still talking about plastics in clothing.
Yeah, producing clothes, I mean, it takes a lot of raw materials, right? We're talking everything from cotton to oil, right, that's used to make polyesters. What are the issues with that?
Well, you absolutely nailed it. It's interesting to think about that there's a huge amount of oil being used to make our clothes. There's a huge fossil piece. Now, there's also just broader carbon emissions from the entire system. It can be 8 to 10% of carbon emissions globally. But we're seeing a lot of polymers and polyesters essentially being blended into fabric. So it's in a lot of clothing. It's probably in the majority of clothing now that we're seeing. That just wasn't the case. So that's a fossil base to begin with. And then you've got more natural fibers like a cotton or a wool. But cotton can be very, very water intensive. So you're seeing a lot of just carbon in general. You're seeing a lot of fossil. You're seeing a lot of dyes. And you're seeing a lot of water as we're thinking about the 100 billion plus pieces of clothing produced each year.
Water, I'm thinking denim in particular, right? That takes a lot of water.
absolutely. It's a huge question in companies that sell denim. It's really cotton-based. So, you know, you start with a plant, but they're often grown in dry climates. So it takes an extraordinary amount of water. It's estimated that it can be 2,000 gallons of water for one pair of jeans. And a way to put that in wow. practical terms is that's enough for one person to drink 10 cups or to drink 8 ounces of water multiple times a day for 10 years. That's one pair of jeans.
One pair of jeans. Wow. Yeah. After the shirts and pants are made, they have to get to the store. This is going to involve trucks, planes, ships, a lot of diesel, right? So what impact does getting the goods to market have on carbon emissions and global warming?
Yeah, that's an important part of this picture. And there's an interesting way to think about it. It's probably actually twofold, which is how do we shop now? And much of shopping is still happening going to a physical store. And so you do have the carbon emissions of transporting from raw materials that are sourced globally and the fabrics that are then typically put together internationally. So the largest sources of clothing, it's really China and then Bangladesh. So you've got all the carbon emissions to get here, but then you've got a new shopping approach, which is ordering online. So you have a kind of a parallel supply chain that's mm-hmm. working that way. All of which ends up with delivery locally. So the supply chains that have online, you're having those trucks deliver, you know, to your home or to the warehouse where you're picking up, or else you're going yourself. So mm-hmm. the carbon emissions is a big part in terms of logistics, and that layers on top of the environmental impact actually of making the materials.
But it's getting into the hands of consumers. What do we know about how long, on average, folks are wearing the clothes before they get rid of them?
This is one of the things that's actually been changing a lot in the last couple of decades. And I saw a phrase, it was clothing utilization, and it's down 36%. But so the idea is people are wearing clothes less before they get rid of them. Hmm. Some clothes, some studies have said even clothing might be worn only 7 or 10 times before people are discarding it. So there's yeah. been a huge growth in the number of garments that the typical consumer, particularly in North America, might have. And then those items are actually being worn much, much less, and then they're discarded.
Yeah, I can believe that. Yeah. I mean, even just think of when you go thrifting or so and things just look brand new and it's like, you know, they're secondhand, but is it really? The person must have worn it once or twice.
Yeah, absolutely. And it goes back to this beginning part of the clothing industry is able to produce on-trend items so fast mm-hmm. that they can very quickly be in the store and then very quickly be discarded. But it's adding up to a lot of clothing that's just not being worn much.
So we're wearing our clothes, Karen, for shorter amounts of time. Help us understand what's happening when we go through our closets and we decide, I'm going to get rid of these items. Where do they go, usually?
Well, the short answer is they end up in landfills. I mean, there's you know, a longer answer to that of, you know, some might go first somewhere else. But the majority of used textiles are ending up in landfills across the country. So you're seeing, you know, growth in that physical waste product from things that really weren't used that much to get there.
What happens when the clothes end up in the landfills? Like, how long does it take for it to actually break down?
Yeah. This gets an interesting question in terms of what's the clothing actually made out of?
Yeah.
So to the extent that it's a natural fiber, that will break down. It'll break down. It'll create methane, but it will decompose. A lot and probably the majority of fabrics that are being created now will have some sort of blend. Mm-hmm. And so the blend will be a plastic, which isn't really going to biodegrade. It's going to be there for the long run. And then you've got, you know, dyes and other chemicals. So a lot of this is not actually decomposing. A lot of it is in landfills. So you then have questions of, is that landfill sound? Are the items going to leach out? You have a big chemical base in there. And you also just have a lot of bulk and an extraordinary backstory of environmental waste that got you to now a new environmental problem, mm-hmm. which is this landfill.
And I brought up that thrift store example before. I mean, this is still leading to waste, right? Or can still lead to waste. Yes?
It's the number of items that we have that is ultimately going to lead to waste. And the opportunity to partner with a thrift store and to shop at a thrift store, that can absolutely take the edge off. That can absolutely reduce some of the items because it allows then a reduction in how many new items are being purchased, which gets to that broader question of the overall supply of clothes. It's also a local store, typically, a part of a community. But even with that, the majority of textiles will still end up being landfilled.
We also mentioned, we should mention that there are deep concerns about the exploitative nature of fast fashion on global workers, most of whom happen to be women, right? We had Huda Kotbi on the show to talk about the issue, and she's the co-founder of Blue Tin Productions, a Chicago-based initiative of Black and Brown women. They're aiming to change the sweatshop model. Here's a little bit of what she had to say to us about how the industry's model impacts the workers.
Gender-based violence is one of the main ways in which all of our clothes are produced, unfortunately. And that looks like firing pregnant women, always overtime work that is never paid, and the ways in which the demands over like women's bodies and value is so delabored. There are threats of sexual assault in order to get people to work faster, and actual sexual assault that happens daily. And there's also just an actual silencing of garment worker voices. It's like a hellhole, and we're all complicit.
Strong words there. What are your thoughts, Karen, and how do we grapple with that reality?
Yeah, there's incredible complexity and incredible challenge in the global supply chain that's bringing us so much cheap clothing. And absolutely, there are longstanding questions about the worker base there in terms of the economic support that they receive, their pay, and also their work environment, not just from the hours, but also from the toxins that they're exposed to. And I think one of the incredibly important questions is, how do you grapple with that existing workforce? It's often in places where there are very few good job opportunities. So this is a very difficult job in many cases. How can the global supply chain send signals back that would create a better working environment for folks who need jobs around the world?
Huda went on to talk about the impact of the pace of the industry. Let's listen.
Fast fashion, so brands like Gap, H&M, Nike even, there's no way that we can create fast fashion that is ethical or truly sustainable. We can use sustainable materials, which is how H&M says that it has a sustainable collection, but that collection is not sustainable because of the output and the sheer number of quantities produced.
So when you think about changing this industry, how much of the responsibility do you think falls on the individual versus the industry?
It's always going to be a mix. And I think it's always important to remember that we as consumers can do something. We also are looking at broad system change that will be needed, policy that will be needed. But if clothes don't sell, they won't be produced. Mm-hmm. So I think there's an opportunity for everyone who is buying to always make a choice when you're thinking about clothing or other things that you're going to consume. What to buy? You vote with your dollars if you're lucky enough to have choices. And I think that's a signal that we can all send. What do we choose to buy? What do we choose not to buy?
It's all an effort to slow down the industry, right? And perhaps make things more sustainable?
I think actually slowing down is an important way to think about it, because then clothing will last longer.
Yeah.
There will be fewer environmental impacts broadly from that. And I was actually looking at a study that talked about the actual support to workers, and it wouldn't take a lot in terms of price point to actually create a meaningful increase in the wages that workers receive, because we're talking about a global workforce where the pay base is just so much lower than the U.S. So we're talking a couple cents a garment actually could lead back. So I think there's both a question of, is there an opportunity to have clothing that is a little higher quality that could last longer? Therefore, if you think of cost per wear to the consumer, it might be lower even. But that price signal might actually go back and create a stronger working environment, less environmental impact, and potentially a better chance for a livelihood for someone who's working in the space.
Makes me think back to that old mantra that we're taught in elementary school, you know, reduce, reuse, recycle, right? How many different jingles come to mind when you think of those three words? Reducing our consumption, it seems like the easiest way to address the problem, but it kind of requires kicking the old consumer habit.
Yeah, there are
how
a lot
of, feasible is that?
You know, there's a lot of R's. You got to do your reduce, reuse, recycle.
Right.
You've got to have some refusing. You've got to have some repurposing. You can have some regifting. So I think we can be creative. There's a lot of R's that we can work with. But I think an important thing in this whole story is that we've seen a huge growth in the number of garments. So it didn't always work this way. But one really interesting thing I found when I was looking into this is that many people only wear about 20% of the clothing that they own. And I think that's the great starting point, is how much do you actually wear? And how can those be pieces that are meaningful for you in terms of what they represent from a fashion standpoint, but also what they represent
so
from an industry?
So that's the reuse R,
yeah,
right? That seems much more promising. Back now with more Reset. We've talked about the problem. Now let's hear about a creative solution that some Chicagoans have figured out to reuse clothes and other materials, keeping them out of the landfill. This weekend, the Chicago Fair Trade History Museum is hosting the largest clothing swap the city has ever seen. And to find out all about it, we are talking to one of the hosts, Catherine Bissell Cordova. Also with us is Christine Brandel, a fiber artist and teacher who will be leading a knitting circle at the swap. And still with us is Karen Weigert, Reset Sustainability contributor. Catherine, why did you decide to host a clothing swap?
Sure. Well, ever since April 24th, 2013, was the Rana Plaza tragedy, which was a building in Bangladesh had cracks in it. The garment workers were – it's a garment factory, and the garment workers were complaining about it. And we're still told if you don't go in, you won't be paid. And so they went in, and over 1,100 garment workers were killed on that day when the building collapsed. And ever since that happened at Chicago Fair Trade, we have very much worked to bring awareness to the problems in the fast fashion industry, aside from all the environmental problems that Karen highlighted very well in the previous segment, also the human cost of it. We're actually having an event April 24th next week, which is the 10th anniversary. But we have really looked at ways so people can break up with fast fashion.
Yeah.
And so clothing swaps is one of the best ways to do it. And I have been going to clothing swaps for 10 years, and I'm telling you, like, they sound fun. They're so fun.
They're
the
fun.
Greatest thing since
I've
sliced
done it too.
Bread.
They are so
There's so much camaraderie.
Fun.
I've made friends from this one annual epic swap that I go to every year. And yeah, so it's just such a good, easy.
I still
easy,
have pieces
right?
in my closet now from
well,
swaps
beautiful
from
pieces,
years ago.
Beautiful pieces that are in perfect condition. And it's just such a way. It's, you know, and Karen was talking about some of the problems with thrifting. I mean, thrifting's way better than buying new things, but it still has its problems. But when you go to a swap, the clothes are taken, they're used, they're loved. And it's like the greatest thing when you have something that you love and there's a slight imperfection or not even. Maybe you've outgrown it.
Yeah.
Which many of us did over the pandemic.
Right.
You see someone else take it and wear it.
Well, you know, hand-me-downs, that's been around forever. Mm-hmm. Is that building on this tradition, you think?
It is. It is. And what we're trying to do with this swap, too, is we're billing this as the inclusive swaps. There's going to be men's clothing, the non-binary, you know, clothing for everyone at this
clothing
swap.
Clothing for
kids,
all.
Clothing
yeah.
for all. Free clothing for
Karen,
all.
Karen, touch on what Catherine just brought up. For the person who's listening and thinking, you know, why is a clothing swap better than a thrift store? What would you say exactly?
Well, I'd start with you probably need both over time, but I'm going to go with having a little bit of fun. I think part of what's so important about a swap is it really is about community. And that's ultimately how all social political change happens. It's when you get to know your neighbor. It's when you do something together. And if you can look good at the end of doing it, even better.
Mm-hmm. Christine, we have talked about the impact of clothes in landfills. But there are lots of practical reasons why people throw clothes away. Maybe there's a hole, maybe a missing zipper, stains. But with a little effort, we can fix those things, can't we?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Explain.
So you can secretly fix something because you just need to put a button on or replace the zipper. I mean, that's pretty basic. And right now we're seeing a huge explosion in the idea of visible mending, so that you have a hole in a sweater and you almost glorify the spot or the hole or the snag or whatever it is. So you can make your garment really individualized and just make it your own.
I feel like there's a sense of pride, too, when I go ahead and sew my own button back on. I'm like, it seems like such a tiny thing, but I'm like, yay, I made this shirt.
It's huge. Yeah, exactly.
Karen, you had a question?
Yeah, I'd love to ask. My sewing skills are probably, I think, where Sasha's might be. But for an expert, are there some things that are easier or some things that are harder to repair? How do you think about that?
Well, I think buttons are really, really easy. And
I was feeling really proud of myself.
No. You should be, right? Because honestly, if you don't do it, if you send it out to be done, it can be relatively spendy.
Right.
Right? So hems, I mean, those are easy to learn how to do. Zippers can be a little bit more complicated. But, I mean, everything is learnable.
Well, and I'd say, too, that at Chicago Fair Trade, we have a Conscious Closet Club. Mm-hmm. And that's how Christine became involved with us, and we've done visible mending workshops, and we're going to have a mender on Friday night. Tomorrow night we're having a preview for the swap and cocktails and whatnot, and Bliss Joy will be there helping with mending.
That's wonderful. Well, you know, you bring up a word that we should probably clarify: visible mending versus quiet mending. Mm-hmm. What would you say is the difference, Christine?
So when you're doing visible mending, it's almost like, hey, I'm mending here. It's can I show you an example?
Absolutely. Yes. You brought some. I see you have a bag of treats.
I do.
A bag of goodies. Oh, that's a sweater. Beautiful sweater. Okay. And that's a visible mending that I can see on the front where it's sort of, you know, patchwork of stitching.
Yeah. So it's stitching. Almost, obvious stitching on a otherwise.
But it looks like a design.
Yellow. Exactly.
That you meant to put there.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Gotcha. So this has been a Japanese tradition for a long time, but it's just starting to gain popularity here in the U.S. What do you think it is that's making it popular?
I think there's a big space for self-expression. And I think that there's a lot of people who are hearing what Karen and Kathleen are saying now about, you know, we can reuse items. We don't have to toss them. And so you can proudly say, yeah, this was mine and I made it mine. And there may be other sweaters or shirts like this, but nothing is exactly like this.
Yeah. Did you bring some other things for us to take a look at?
Oh, yeah.
Because I was like, that's a big bag. I'm sure you'd have more than one sweater. And what was cool about that visible mend that you just showcased on the sweater, too, was that you can use different color thread, right? And you can really complement the color of the item and contrast.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. And so, I mean, it's easy to go through.
What's that, a pair of shorts or a pair of
trousers? Yeah. And so it's a patch. And then there's also stitching all around it.
A patch on the knee and then a little peekaboo bright
little
blue color.
Yeah.
Love that.
And, you know, ever popular jeans.
Oh, denim.
So, you know.
Oh, yeah. That stitch work is pretty cool.
Yeah. You can do some fun stuff with
that. Looks like a really cool design. So tell us more, Kathryn, about the other mending opportunities that are going to be happening at the event this weekend.
Sure. Well, they'll be mending services on Friday night. And then on Saturday, we actually have Caitlin Stewart, who's the Windy City Thrifter, is going to be there giving styling advice. And on Sunday, we're going to have Jess Frausto, the Thrifted Gay, on Sunday doing styling. And, you know, if you just follow us or follow along, we'll definitely be doing some more mending workshops. They've been very popular.
You know, what if nothing needs to be repaired and someone just maybe they just want something new?
Come to our swap?
Yeah. There's that.
Yeah.
What are ways that you think people can think about giving an old garment a new look?
That's not my area of expertise. I'm going to pass it back to you. She's very creative. You should ask her about her skirt she's wearing.
Well, you can
tell us about the skirt that you're wearing.
Oh.
I hear there's a story.
Well, it started life as a pair of jeans. And then I have two parts of two shirts that were my dad's absolute favorite. And when they shredded too much that my mom wouldn't let him wear them anymore, he gave them to me and I turned it all into a skirt and then did some extra stitching on it. So, yeah.
So,
just a connection that way.
Ways that folks can turn old garments into new looks. Where would you say they start?
Yeah. So if you had... I'm just going to make this up. If you had a shirt that you really like and maybe you want to change up the collar or maybe you want to put something different on the cuff or change the sleeve out, you can also, if you had like three sweaters, you can take them apart and then put the back with a different front or different sleeves. I mean, you can... It's just your imagination.
Feels like the sky's the limit.
It totally is. It absolutely is. It's kind of a black hole once you get started.
This is Reset. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. And if you're just tuning in, we are talking about ways to keep clothes out of landfills through mending garments and hosting clothing swaps. This weekend, the Chicago Fair Trade History Museum is hosting a giant clothing swap. And so we're talking with Kathryn Bissell-Cordova with Chicago Fair Trade and fiber artist Christine Brandel. Also Reset sustainability contributor Karen Weigert. I'm going to go around the room. I'm curious, what are your favorite items to get at a clothing swap? You first, Karen.
She talked about cocktails. Am I allowed to?
Clothing items.
Just kidding.
Clothes.
When I think about items that I've gotten that have not been brand new, I actually think it's awesome to grab jackets. They tend to be more expensive, and they're a fun item that you can see.
Same. I am jackets, blazers. Those are my go-tos. And when I talked earlier about still having pieces, those are the things. I go for colors, and I can swap them out. I wear dresses a lot, And yeah, that's the magic. That's the sauce. What about you, Catherine?
Well, I'd say my proudest thrift was for my daughter, who a friend had brought a pair of 20-year-old Doc Marten boots, and my daughter, who is getting goth, you know, as a teenager, and she wear, you know, 5, 6,
don't they all go through
later,
that stage?
She's still in that stage. She's still, you know, 6, 7 years later, she's still wearing them, and they're in perfect condition.
Love that. Nice. What about you, Christine?
I like wool sweaters because I can do a lot with them. You can felt them, or you can keep wearing them, or you can do all kinds of stuff with
them. Oh, interesting. I'm going to have to pick your brain a little bit more after we get off the air. Give us your approach when it comes to thinking about the potential of scraps and waste materials to become new items. Like, what are you looking for? What kinds of ways are you bending and mending things, if you will?
So you can remake almost anything. I mean, if you can sew on it, you can, like, either with a machine or by hand, you can turn it from a plastic bag into something totally different. You can make yarn out of things that might not be yarn otherwise.
So you're doing things with plastic bags too? I hear you said that if you can bend it, you can knit it.
Yep.
Is that true? Is that your motto?
Yep. So.
Oh, you're digging in the bag.
Digging in my
You've
bag
got
again.
Something else.
So, plastic bag yarn. I knit it.
That was a plastic bag?
Yep.
And it's now. What do you keep in there? Is that like a little makeup bag or your?
Well, it's small weaving looms.
Weaving looms. The next best thing.
So, plastic bag yarn.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
That's incredible. That is incredible. You make yarn out of plastic bags. You use VCR tape, too?
Yeah.
What do you do with that?
You can knit with VCR tape or cassette tape. I mean, if you can bend it, you can weave it or knit it or crochet it. You can stitch with
You're
it.
You're making yoga mats, I hear?
Yeah. Yeah. Thick, thick bits of plastic. Like, for these kind of things,
yeah.
I would cut the plastic into smaller strips. But if you use a plastic bag in its entirety, mm-hmm. then when you crochet or knit it up, it's about that thick.
Oh my gosh, that is incredible. Karen, are you, I mean, first of all, you're, for those who can't see, Karen's jaw is on the floor.
I'm just amazed at this. I have got to up my game, is what I just learned.
We're like jackets, blazers. And Christine comes and just like, you know, blows us out of the water here.
Also, apparently I need a portable loom. But
yeah.
And here I am thinking, like, what makeup products can I put in that bag? How can events like the swap, Karen, and teaching mending skills, how can all of that help with sustainability efforts? Drive that point home for us.
Absolutely. And it, to me, it's actually two parts. The first is it does connect people to other people. And that's actually the greatest way to think about creating the community, the society, and ultimately the economy that we want. But in a really particular way, it allows a product to last longer. So that reduces the need for new products, and it reduces the transportation to bring that new product to you. So you reduce all of the environmental harms that would come from both the production and the transportation. And then you get a story and you get a friend.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So back to you, Catherine. I want to hear more about this fun clothing swap coming up. What other activities are on tap for folks?
Sure. Well, one thing someone texted me during this, actually, they'll be mending also on Saturday. And yes, on Friday night, there'll definitely be fair trade wine and snacks. And then also we're launching tomorrow night a knitting project that we have that we're going to be using fair trade yarn. And we've gotten a grant from the Simmons Center for Global Chicago, and we're partnering with India Development Service, and we're partnering with a women's fair trade knitting cooperative, Nari Himalaya, mm-hmm. or Himalaya Nari, sorry. And guess who's going to be teaching the knitting part? Well, helping.
Oh, I wonder.
It's not Karen. No, the Indian women have filmed some videos, and it's also just letting people know, people who make their things. It's a way to see, and a good thing that Christina's pointed out, you know, whenever you try to make something, then you really appreciate the work that goes into it.
Oh, for sure.
I'm with you two here. I am not handy, but not, I mean, not, that's what I'm getting gathered from
I
this
mean,
conversation.
Catherine, I'm sewing buttons here.
True.
Come on.
But, you know, an important thing that is true, though, these days, kids these days, no, they don't have home, they don't learn that anymore.
They don't.
I'm old enough. I learned that in school. school, but they're not teaching that anymore, which is really also adding to the problem of a throwaway culture. But so there will be it's from 5 to 9 tomorrow night, Friday night, and then it's from 12 to 5 Saturday and Sunday.
Oh, beautiful.
It's simple. People get kind of like, oh, I don't have anything. Don't worry. We already have a lot of nice clothes and we're going to have a lot more. And then, yeah, then afterwards we're going to donate them.
Yeah.
But
that's great.
But yeah. I mean, it's just there, as I've said, like it sounds fun. It's more fun than it sounds.
3 days of fun there.
Yes.
So, of course, Christine, we just put you on blast. Your knitting circle happening at the swap. You got to tell us more about what you'll be doing.
So we do have Fair Trade Yarn, and we'll be either teaching knitting if you don't know how already, or if you know how and just need a moment to knit something, you're welcome to do that. We have all the supplies there.
And we'll be creating a blanket out of all the squares on World Fair Trade Day on May 13th.
Oh, that's awesome. How did you get into this, Christine?
Which this is that.
Right, because there's so many things that you do. The knitting portion of the conversation.
How did I learn to knit?
Yes.
Oh, gosh. When I was a young kid, my very cool cousin from California came out here to go to college, and she taught me how to knit and crochet when I was 10.
Wow. So, yes. Oh, you've been doing this a while. Yeah. That is awesome. Yep. Well, you've just given us the details there, Catherine, of the event. But, I mean, I know it does cost money, whereas traditional swaps are free. So tell us why and
sure,
give us an idea
sure.
of how much.
Yeah. So a $10 donation on Saturday or Sunday, $35 Friday night. But that's unlimited fair trade wine, cocktails, mending services, all of this.
Karen's happy about that.
It's also the discount for members, or if you become a member, then it's free. So, and it's, you know, partly we do a lot of, I mean, we do a lot of free events.
Yes.
And we're just, this will also go to support future activities.
Yeah, it's a great cause.
Yeah. And we, you know, we work with a lot of high schools. A lot of high schools do swaps, and we help them become fair trade schools and get into sustainability and fair trade and all
it's
of
gonna
that.
It's going to be a
so
good
time. So the donations
time.
Support that.
We've been talking with Catherine Bissell Cordova with Chicago Fair Trade, fiber artist Christine Brandel, and Reset Sustainability contributor Karen Weigert. Thank you all. This episode of Reset was produced by Linnea Dominic, and it was edited by Andrew Merriweather and Meha Ahmed. Make Reset a regular part of your day by subscribing to our podcast. We post episodes every morning and afternoon, Monday through Friday, and a bonus episode on Saturdays. That's all for today. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. We'll talk to you tomorrow.